Friends, would you please be with me in a spirit of prayer? Holy and loving and life-giving God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be forever acceptable in your sight. O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So what is perhaps the most annoying thing about the Bible is the fact that most of the stories in the Bible are not nice, tidy, little, self-contained, self-explanatory, standalone units. And instead, most of the stories of the Bible are like a single episode in a television series, where if you haven't seen every single episode up until that point, you're going to have absolutely no idea what is going on. So for example, if you had started watching Game of Thrones this year, with Season 8, Episode 1, good luck to you. Good luck to you figuring out who is who and why they're doing what they're doing. I've been watching since Season 1, and I have no idea. I have memorized maybe two characters' names. So if you're trying to jump in the middle of things, good luck to you. You're going to need it. And the stories of the Bible, I think, are more like that than most of us would care to admit. And that is especially true for today's passage from Acts chapter 10. Now, today's story, it has two main characters in it. The first is a guy by the name of Cornelius. He is a Roman army officer. And also, we're told, he worships God. However, he is not yet converted to Judaism, which means that although he worships God, he is not considered Jewish. He is still considered a Gentile. That's main character number one. And then main character number two is, of course, good old Apostle Peter. Or, if you were here last week, bad old, murderous Apostle Peter. But today, in today's story, the Apostle Peter is staying with his friend Simon in the city of Joppa, which is located on the eastern coast of Israel. And at about noontime, while the midday meal was being prepared, Peter went up to the roof of his friend's house. And please bear in mind that the roofs of these houses are flat in Israel. They were considered living spaces, so this is not an abnormal thing to do. You could sleep up there. You could pray up there. So Peter went up on top of the house to pray for a while he was waiting for dinner to be made. And as he was praying, he fell into a trance. And while he was in this trance, God sent to Peter a vision, a very strange vision. Peter looks up and he sees descending from heaven a sheet. So I want you to imagine a bed sheet being suspended by its four corners. And in the swoopy bit in between, the swoop of the fabric coming down from heaven, there are animals of all different kinds. And included in that number of animals in that sheet, there are at least some that are considered ritually impure according to the dietary restrictions as found in the book of Leviticus. So Peter sees all of these animals coming down. And then God speaks to Peter. God says, Peter, get up, kill, and eat. But Peter hears this, and being an observant Jew, and having never before eaten a piece of impure, unclean meat, he said, by no means, Lord, never have I ever, since I was a small child, ever eaten anything impure, anything restricted by those laws that we find in the book of Leviticus. Peter is aghast that God would suggest that he should eat these unclean animals in the sheet. But then God replies to Peter, or better, God scolds Peter. And he says, do not call unclean that which God has made clean. That vision then repeats two times, and Peter awakes from this trance that he is in. Now, from our modern day Christian perspective, and by that I mean, of course, from our bacon and lobster roll loving, shrimp cocktail gobbling modern day Christian perspective, these dietary restrictions we find in the book of Leviticus, they seem a little bit fussy, don't they? They seem a little bit nitpicky. They seem just a little bit bizarre. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that most of you have never had the pleasure of reading them. So I thought I would just share with you the first paragraph of these dietary restrictions as found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 11. And I quote, "Of all the land animals, these are the ones that you may use for food. You may eat any animal that has completely split hooves and chews the cud. You may not, however, eat the following animals that do have split hooves or that chew the cud, but don't do both. The camel chews the cud but does not have split hooves, so it is unclean for you. The hyrax," which, just picture a fat squirrel without a tail. "The hyrax chews the cud but does not have split hooves, so it too is unclean for you. The hare chews the cud but does not have split hooves, so it too is unclean. The pig has evenly split hooves but does not chew the cud, so it too is unclean. You may not eat the meat of these animals or even touch their carcasses. They are ceremonially unclean for you, thus saith the Lord." So the book of Leviticus actually continues from there, and it continues on to specify what birds can and cannot be eaten, what kind of sea creatures can and cannot be eaten, what kind of insects can and cannot be eaten. And from our modern-day Christian perspective, these rules are just fussy-seeming and nitpicky-seeming and a little bit bizarre. We could have saved God a little bit of time, and he could have excluded the whole bit about insects. We're not going to eat any of those. Don't worry about it, God. It's all right. But at the specific place, and at the specific time that these rules were instituted, they actually had a very important purpose. And like any good TV series, in order to understand that purpose, you just kind of need to recap the episodes that have come before. So these little rules about food that we find in the Bible, they're found in the book of Leviticus. So what is the episode? What is the book of the Bible that comes immediately before Leviticus? Of course, it is Exodus. Yes, it is Exodus. And the book of Exodus, what it does is that it chronicles the journey of the Israelites from being slaves in Egypt to being free people out in the wilderness as they journey towards the promised land. And at the beginning of the book of Exodus, God is nowhere in the picture. He's nowhere to be seen. All that the Israelites know is despair and hardship and oppression at the hands of the Egyptians. But then God intervenes in their story, and by the end of the book of Exodus, the Israelites are a free people. And God is with them in a very real way. By the end of the book of Exodus, the Israelites have built a portable temple called the Tent of Meeting, so that God's presence could live with them. It could literally reside among them on their journey to the Promised Land. The book of Exodus chronicles this story from slavery into freedom and new life in relationship with God. I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't need you to raise your hands. I don't need you to name any names. But have any of you ever been in a relationship that you would label as dysfunctional and or toxic? Has anyone ever found themselves in a bad relationship? Don't raise your hand. Don't name names. Just I'm going to assume because we're all adults here that at one point or another we have found ourselves in a bad relationship. And I wonder, when you finally got to the other side of that relationship, when you were finally free of that relationship, did you feel a little bit disoriented? Did you have a hard time getting your feet back on the ground, figuring out what is up, what is down, what is left, what is right? I wonder maybe then you tried to get into a new relationship and you suddenly realized that you have all this baggage that you're carrying that you didn't realize that you were carrying. You had unconsciously picked up all these maladaptive patterns of behavior that in the context of that old relationship, that unhealthy relationship, that toxic relationship, right? They were coping strategies. They helped you get through. But then in the context of this new relationship that you're in, they're just kind of messing everything up. They're getting in the way. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? No, this is completely a foreign experience to all of us here, surely. But what you need to know is that experience of just coming out of a really bad relationship, carrying all that baggage. That is where the Israelites are at the end of the book of Exodus. That's where that episode ends. So in this next episode, in the next book of the Bible, God gives the Israelites what can only be described as a gift. God just gives them these very concrete rules. So concrete are these rules. God says, do not eat this. Eat this instead. When you make a sacrifice to me, do it in this way. Do not do it in that way. The book of Leviticus is full of these just super concrete rules. And the reason God is giving these rules to the people of Israel is because for 200 years, 200 to 400 years, for generations, they have labored under Egyptian oppression. They don't understand what it means to be free. So even though by the end of the book of Exodus, they are physically free, in their hearts and their minds, they are still slaves. And so God is giving them these rules, and he's saying, here are these rules, follow them. Live your lives by these rules, and you will learn once again what it means to be a free people. Live your life by these rules, and you will learn once again what it means to be a holy people, living in relationship with their God, with your God, rather. So while from our perspective these rules seem a little bit nitpicky, a little bit fussy, a little bit bizarre, at the time they had a much bigger purpose than just deciding what people could and could not eat. With these rules, God is making, God is forming, God is constituting a people. A people distinct and set apart from all others. A people who will carry God's love into the world. These rules are about creating a community. That's what Leviticus is all about. So back in today's story, when God releases Peter, and through Peter, all Christians, from these dietary restrictions, we know from previous episodes that it's about something much bigger than just what they can eat and that they cannot eat. God didn't just wake up one day and suddenly decide that bacon is delicious. Neither is he repudiating the laws that have brought his people thus far in the world. And to his credit, and we don't get to say that much about Peter, but to Peter's credit, he immediately recognizes that this change in dietary laws is about something so much bigger, so much bigger. And that is why when he wakes up from his trance and three messengers have come to Simon's house for him to take him back to the home of Cornelius the Gentile, Peter goes without hesitation to Cornelius' home, even though it was forbidden for Jews to enter into Gentiles' homes because they were considered unclean. Because Peter recognizes that when God is tweaking these laws, he's not just futzing about with the Jewish food pyramid. But what God is doing is that God is reimagining, recreating, reconstituting the boundary of God's people. And Peter recognizes now that what sets God's people apart is not their adherence to the law anymore, but what sets God's people apart is whether or not you let God's spirit of love reign in your life. And Peter recognizes that you can do that whether you are a Jew or whether you are a Gentile. Peter recognizes that you can do that whether you are a beggar or whether you are a billionaire. God recognizes that you can do that whether you are 9 years old or 9 decades old. Dorothy, shout out to you. You can do that whether you are an American, an African, an Asian, or an Antarctican. You can do that whether you've been a Christian all your life or whether you're just beginning to dip your toes into that water right now. What sets God's people apart, what makes them distinct, is that you let the loving Spirit of God, the Spirit of Jesus Himself, live in your heart, work through your hands, bring you to life in this world, where it assuredly will. God's Spirit living in our hearts and our minds is now what defines God's people. And if you let that Spirit in your life, God can work through you to accomplish great things. And through you, God can send God's love into this world. Thanks be to God. Amen.